Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Mac Barnett and Adam Rex, and find out how this book was made. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 287 of the podcast with Mac Barnett and Adam Rex, the author, illustrator, team responsible most recently for How This Book Was Made. Mac and Adam's newest picture book together explores the bookmaking process from idea to editor to production to you. Though Mac and Adam make clear that the Mac and Adam represented in How This Book Was Made are two completely different characters from the Mac and Adam from Chloe and the Lion, who are, in turn, completely different from the Mac and Adam who sit down with me for this conversation. You're gonna love this one. Here's episode number 287 of the podcast with Mac Barnett and Adam Rex. Welcome to the podcast, Mac and Adam. I'm glad to have you here together.
Thank you for having us.
We are glad to be here. For voice recognition's sake, I am Mac. This is my voice, the kind of deeply sonorous, beautiful voice.
And I am also Mac.
This is my favorite part of Invisibilia, where they're like, we both sound the same. We get criticized that we both sound the same. Clearly, all men's voices sound the same also. Oh, people. Why must
the emails are pouring in, Matthew.
They are. Stop. Please stop tweeting now. I will discern them. I'll put an effect on their voices so you can tell. Mac, you'll sound like an alligator for sake of argument. And Adam, pick your spirit animal.
My spirit animal is James Earl Jones.
Got it. Perfect. I think I have a James Earl Jones effect that we can apply after the recording. This will be ideal. Wonderful. So, wait. Should I be talking to you about how this book was made or how this book was marketed? I need to figure out which angle we're going to take here.
We're open to all questions. We don't put strings on our interviews, unlike some of those other guys, Aaron Becker.
Yeah. That guy.
You know he needs all of his questions beforehand and has his answers prepared for him by his aides.
And then he wants to answer them wordlessly.
Yeah.
That is true. It was a different kind of podcast to do the wordless podcast with Aaron. So welcome to having a book that you're like out on tour crazy about that is going to be the book that we all in the library use constantly. How This Book Was Made is, I mean, I love that it's funny and it's also like a great reference point for exactly the namesake of the book.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for thanking us.
I mean, clearly, I know, Mac, when you set out to make a book, you think, how can I help Matthew Winner, one of my favorite male librarians from Maryland?
That's right. And also his spirit animal.
And his spirit animal.
Actually, Adam, I don't know that we've talked about this before, but you're my spirit animal, so I just assumed that you would be on this chat because of talking to Mac.
Oh, thank you very much.
I like everything going on in this book, and then I realized, though, that it's because I like when you two come together to work. Did you set out to work together? This had to be one that you, every once in a while, are just looking for where you can fit it in your schedule to work together, right?
I got to say, when I got the manuscript for how this book was made, it said, an illustrator who lives in TK. So I don't think this was written with me in mind.
Okay, so let's talk this out. This kind of has its origins in a thing that I do at school visits, and it happened actually the first time Adam and I were on tour. The first tour I went on, it was with Adam. It was for Guess Again, which was the second book that we made together. And a kid asked me how a book was made, so I had a big whiteboard behind me, and I started doing this presentation that was not super helpful in terms of factual information, but I think got to the emotional truth of the process. And Adam was there sort of watching me do these terrible drawings. And then I've kept doing it over the years. And Adam has always been a character in that presentation. It's the presentation is actually the story of how Billy Twitters and his Blue Whale Problem was made. Yeah. So Adam was a character in it. And certainly when I wrote this story, I imagined Adam doing it. But I didn't want to be so presumptuous as to fill in Arizona and make him feel like he had to be committed to it. So it was really just sort of my gentility, I think, the TK was. Yeah.
But you did approach it then with just submitting a manuscript, not coming at it together. That's interesting. Okay.
No, I sent it to Adam before we
sent it to the publisher.
Okay, I see what you mean. So Adam saw it first, and then he signed on, and we came to the publisher as a team.
Yeah, that's right. It did seem just automatically obvious that, you know, I needed to illustrate this book because I had seen this presentation so many times and I really enjoyed the way that it had kind of changed and been refined. I would, you know, not see Mac for like 6 months or something, and then we'd be in the same town again and I'd watch what he had added and what he had deleted. And since I was always kind of a character in it from the start, it was just a no-brainer that clearly I needed to be the illustrator on it.
I love it. I like, too, Adam, in your art that you approach it that way, much like in Chloe, that it feels like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it just feels like you were building, like, 3D models for some of this and taking photographs of it. There's just a depth that's apparent in the illustrations that is really nice.
Yeah, so in Chloe, I built a little balsa wood stage and some balsa wood sets and then I built some puppets of Mac and myself, and I did photograph these little tableaus, and then kind of added some of the other characters like Chloe digitally afterwards, so that she would look very different from the quote reality of the puppets that represented Mac and me. And then when how this book was made came around, like my initial instinct was, I still have those puppets, so good, I get to use the puppets again.
Oh, yeah.
But then, I don't know, that seemed like a bit of a cop-out. Everybody sort of understood that how this book was made was kind of a spiritual sequel to Chloe and the Lion, but it was not a, you know, strictly speaking, a sequel. So I wanted it to visually relate to Chloe and the Lion, but still, you know, force myself to do something new. So I ended up doing a lot of cut paper, and I basically made these dioramas of cut paper that I'd photographed and then kind of tinted digitally, and that's what makes up a good deal of the book. That and an actual globe that I repainted to use as a setting for a lot of the spreads as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, Mac Barnett and Adam Rex are characters in Chloe and the Lion, and they're characters in how this book was made. But the Mac and Adam of Chloe and the Lion are actually two completely different characters with a different set of priorities and personalities from the Mac and Adam of how this book was made. So I think it makes sense that that we were drawn differently. Good job, Adam.
Thanks, Mac.
I can feel that too, Mac. I'm glad you brought that up, the feeling like it was two different characters. And to have it to have it be on an actual globe, Adam, is just, yeah, the art in this is really, it's just stunning. I mean, Adam, I've talked to you before and said that I love, especially as an illustrator, that I feel like I see from your book to book that you're challenging yourself to, you've got a style, but you're not applying the exact same approach to every book you do. And I feel like you could, because you have a style that works really well, but you keep offering up something that looks just a little different and a little different. And the feel of this, whenever there's that traveling across the globe to go somewhere else, the fact that you have the camera sort of right down low on the globe to see that gentle curve of the earth, and following the dotted arrow to go wherever, it's just, that quality is just subtle. It just feels like you're being pulled into the story and into that travel. It's just executed really well.
Thank you so much. And I'm as surprised as anyone that if it is executed well, because I keep doing these things like photographing globes, despite the fact that I am no photographer and I basically just have to kind of figure out these different processes, from scratch almost every time. But it does keep me engaged and excited about new books, knowing that I get to try something new. And it's a lucky position for an illustrator to be in, because in almost every other part of the illustration world, you would be very dissuaded from having a lot of different styles and working in a bunch of different media. You would definitely be pushed towards just having one recognizable thing that you do, so that when an art director hires you, they know exactly what they're getting.
Yeah.
And, picture books have been very good to me in that regard, that I really get to experiment and play around.
That's nice. Hey, Mac, how much of the text in this book sort of has remained the same in the presentations that you've been doing? I almost feel like the presentations you've been doing have almost been you working through manuscript drafts in that sense then, right?
Yeah, I guess so. The book is actually very different from the presentation, I think, because it has to be. I am always interested in form, and I think the form that I'm going after and trying to inhabit and explode when I'm doing the presentation at a school is sort of a boring whiteboard presentation. Like, that's what I'm going for. And there are different, very different set of rules for how that will go as a live performance versus a picture book, which very often is a live performance, but has a physical object that you're talking about and page turns and just different rules of storytelling. Plus, I'm working with a much better illustrator than I do when I do my presentations. The illustrator I use when I do my presentations is me.
True. Which also then in front of the children makes a good case for, this is why I don't illustrate my own books.
Yeah. The pirates, there are pirates in both.
Yeah.
Although the pirate section is much longer in my presentation. And there is a big fight with over editorial changes in both, because it wouldn't be a Mac Barnett story without a big fight over editorial changes.
What I really like about the presentation that he does on the whiteboard in front of the kids, though, is that I don't think at any point have you ever really acknowledged that, like, these are not excellent drawings that I'm making. The live presentation always began with Mac telling the kids that he was going to tell them the story about how he made this book, Billy Twitters and His Blue Whale Problem. And then he begins by drawing a sort of semi-amorphous shape on the whiteboard that looks like nothing more than a blue whale, and he invites the kids to guess what it is, and then it turns out it's actually the United States of America, not a blue whale. And it turns out the United States of America actually looks a little bit like a blue whale.
A lot of astronauts say that, actually.
Is that true? That's
awesome, actually. Yeah, it's 100% true.
100% true. Then good for you to pay homage back to them and include the astronauts in how this book was made.
Well done.
Hey, I want to, do you mind if I, my brain is like stuck on this fascination of Adam, you playing around with art through all of your books and trying different things and showing the art directors in that way the scope of what you can do in your art. And Mac, I keep thinking of the work of this story being honed down after all these different presentations. I'm just seeing this journey here. But I feel like, too, you so aptly start the book, Mac, in your text with talking to children, talking to the reader about how writing a story is also that journey, too. Someone, I don't remember who famously said that anyone can write, but a writer rewrites. And your story sort of starts off with that message. So do you mind if I read to you both? It's story time. Is that okay? Can I read to you both?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. I'll read the first couple spreads. At first, this book wasn't a book. It was an idea. Ideas can come at funny times. When I had the idea for this book, I went to a quiet place and I wrote. I wrote from early in the morning until late at night. It was very hard work. Soon I had a bunch of words on paper. Those words were a first draft. The first draft of this book was not so good. Neither was the second draft, or the third, or the twelfth. But writing lots of drafts is a useful part of the writing process. For instance, when the tiger came back for revenge because I beat him in arm wrestling, I burned these drafts and scared him away. I stopped there because the illustration, Adam, that you did of, like, Mac on a hill, like, where our vantage point is that we're looking past the tiger, who's holding his head, up to Mac with this fire, flames bursting behind him. I feel like to set the tone right there, we're 3 pages in, and that's just, it's just awesome. It just sets the tone for what we're going to get in this story, which is a little bit real.
It's also my really important message about why draft writing is important. Pyrotechnic displays to frighten tigers. That's why you got to do it, kids.
That's right. The blank papers won't scare the tigers away. They have to be a little worn, a little tested. That's really what makes them burn high.
If they have too many commas on them, bad use of adverbs.
Yeah. Burn up some commas.
Burn it up. I can see the commas floating away in the ashes above the illustration. That's great. It's
nice. But, you know, to be honest, though, like when I talk to kids about writing, I feel like one of the main things I try to impart on them, if I try to impart anything, is just the understanding. And I think it's a really liberating understanding that almost no writers they've ever heard of publish a first draft. It's almost unheard of. I heard C.S. Lewis did it, and that's like it.
Really?
Everybody rewrites, and, you know, in one sense, I guess there's some kid in the audience that thinks, well, that sounds like more work, and maybe that's discouraging, but there's another kid who realizes, oh, I don't have to get it right the first time. I don't have to know what I'm doing before I get started.
I always share that I hate rewriting. I hate rewriting. Mm. I don't like doing drafts. That did discourage me when I was a kid, when they would say, like, writers write drafts. Mm. I was like, maybe I'll become a veterinarian.
I think
that job just seems too sad.
Oh, I think that
let's bring us all down for a minute.
I think that rewriting is hard, and yeah, I mean, I also think I came from teaching fourth grade and now teach K to five, but still, the time it takes just to write a first draft and to think that you want me to redo the whole thing, not just even correct edits, but sometimes try things in an entirely different way. Well, I guess sometimes we don't even have time for that in the way that school is set up. But when you do, it's hard. It's exhausting. Sometimes, again, it's
painful and embarrassing to return to things you've written. Only dogs and writers return to their own vomit. Boom, I'm debuting that aphorism right here.
All right, well, now we know. Now we know what mental image you're putting in the heads of all of your schools that you're visiting.
I think a lot of people really want to believe that anyone who makes any kind of art, whether it's visual art or writing, there's this common idea that, oh, these people are just a little magic or something, that they tap into the great beyond and are able to sort of channel a story. And there are some authors and artists who do their best to perpetuate that kind of idea about us themselves. And I do personally as much as I can to puncture that idea and help kids understand that if you don't feel like you really know what you're doing, then you have that in common with literally every writer that you have ever enjoyed reading.
That's such a great point. I guess it's more accessible to picture what it looks like for a writer to rewrite, because we can picture the the text on the page and crossing stuff off and redoing it. But Adam, when you are planning out a book like this, or I guess any book, what does that draft process look like for you? Are you working in sketches? Are you like, how complete can something get before you're redoing stuff?
I usually do my best to get everything nailed down in a satisfactory way before I'm really moving to the final rendering of the image. So it's starting out with messy little thumbnail drawings, you know, very small, almost indecipherable drawings. And I show these to kids a lot too. They usually, you know, I might be able to show them a page in my sketchbook that might have every spread of Billy Twitters and his blue whale problem on it, but in very small, messy drawings, so that maybe the only thing that they can make out is a blue whale in one or two of the thumbnails, and they'll admit to me that they have no idea what any of the rest of it is. It doesn't matter. I know what it is, and all it is just me trying to figure out, you know, what each spread is going to look like, yeah, how I'm gonna compose the elements, and I, you know, a really good composition in an illustration can feel inevitable, just in the same way that I think like good direction in a movie can seem inevitable. When I was a kid, I didn't understand what directors did. I figured, well, you have the cameraman, he turns the camera on, and you have the writer, he writes the words that the actors say, and then you just aim the camera at the actors. And I didn't understand how many choices went into how to shoot that movie, because I think a really good looking movie just seems like it has to have been shot that way. And I think illustrations are the same way.
So is that something that you end up, can you experience that yourself while you're working? Can you experience that, yes, this feels right, this feels like I have it? Or are you, yeah, or do you have to step back from it?
Sometimes you got to step back. Sometimes like anything, you get frustrated and you have to come back to it with fresh eyes. And then oftentimes it's just completely obvious immediately what needs to be done, mm-hmm, if you just walk away from it or look at it the next morning.
Adam, that skill is something that I feel like, I don't know how to translate that to children, but that's a skill too, the being able to walk away and look at it later and see what it looks like. Mac, what's your writing process look like in that term? Are you a person that can write a first draft and then, like, I hear sometimes about people writing it and then locking it away for a couple months to come back with fresh eyes later. Is that something that you're able to do, or what does it look like for you?
It depends on deadlines. If there's a deadline involved, I'm probably brushing up close enough to it or have blown so far past it that I may not have that luxury. But it's a good thing to do. For me, I think that so much for picture book writing comes from just being up in front of kids telling stories. That's the experience that made me want to first write picture books, and it's something I still do a lot every year, and I love doing it. And so when I'm sitting alone, I'm trying to, in some ways, get a piece of my mind thinking about this in performance. I'm imagining how this works in front of an audience, and essentially just going, you know, I think you get just an instinct after doing it long enough for the sort of rhythms of kids' attention as you're reading this book. Yep. So I try to replicate that, but the most useful thing to me, I think, as part of the draft process, there are two times where it becomes really useful. One is after sketches come in and text is laid out, and so I can see, oh, you know what, I'm going to cut this line, or maybe I need a little bit more here, but typically it's cutting. It's just stuff that is irrelevant now that there are pictures, or is funnier if you take it out and you just let a picture handle it. Yeah. And then I also show things pretty early to kids when I do school visits. I'll show thumbnails with text. If you read a picture book manuscript without pictures, it's probably not going to work, but you don't need much before that magic of how a picture book works kind of starts coming to life. So as soon as I have thumbnails, if I have thumbnails with text laid out, I'll start reading that to kids, and that'll help me find where maybe I wasn't quite right in how I imagined it going at home.
That makes sense too. Thinking about Adam, you doing the thumbnails and drawing what is basically just sort of blocking shapes on the page to see how everything will lay out. I feel like you're tapping into something there that happens in our imagination when we read a book or when we hear text, that we start to picture what it is that is being addressed in the text. And so, Mac, then, for you to be able to pull kids into that as you're reading the manuscript to them and have not just sort of a slight assist on them getting to picture what perhaps Adam, at the same moment that you're reading that book, what Adam is working on in his studio, is something that I think is neat for kids to be able to picture that.
Yeah, you know, I think picture book writing, any kind of story writing, really, it's all about leaving gaps. So I write a thing that has a lot of gaps in it for Adam to fill in, and then ideally, when the illustrator is done, there are still gaps for the person who's reading the book out loud to kind of fill in and put their own spin on it. And then finally, there should still be some gaps left for the reader to crawl into and figure those things out. So you're creating spaces.
I like it. And are you then, I mean, I know you're out on book tour now for How This Book Was Made, and I assume that both of you, because I know what books your names are attached to, I assume both of you have the opportunity to be out quite often. How do you strike that balance of, I need to turn some stuff down so I can work, versus I'm getting fueled by being out in front of children and out in front of librarians sharing this story? Or is that just something you kind of just learn to manage?
Well, I'm at the phase in my life now where I'm just trying to get back home because I want to get back to my kid. And so that's just a purely selfish motivation that is, you know, right now is driving me, you know, not really wanting to go out on tour all that much, even yeah. though, you know, as you imply, when I get out here, I do feel really invigorated. When I was in Decatur at their book festival, you know, it's very strange. I don't have a lot of close friendships in my hometown. I see my friends twice a year in a city that neither one of us lives in.
Yeah. For me, I kind of feel like I'm always on the road because I don't like my neighbors. And so I'm escaping them. But I spent the first half of this year 65% of the time I was away from home, and that balance is wrong. That was wrong.
65%. Yeah, that's a lot.
65%. So I'm trying to travel a little bit less and do less. I love getting up in front of kids. I think it's really fun, and it is healthy for the work. But in terms of how to strike that balance, I have no idea. But I'm trying to figure it out.
Hey, Adam. School's First Day of School came out. Last time I talked to you, you shared this book idea that you said I couldn't figure out. How did you say it? Something like it was a puzzle that you couldn't figure out how to illustrate it, and that you were so excited because Christian Robinson was taking on, and now it's out. And I, as far as I can tell from Twitter and Facebook, all of us, including myself, all of us have been reading it our first weeks of school.
All of Twitter.
All of Twitter is reading it.
It's been very warmly received, and I'm really grateful. And so much of that is because of Christian just really nailing that book and solving the problem that I had alluded to when I spoke to you before, which was, you know, if the main character of your story is a school, then how do you decide to depict that school? How do you anthropomorphize it or not? You know, and it was, you know, ultimately it was a question that I couldn't think of a good answer to, so I decided to punt, and Christian just got it exactly right.
Yeah, together you both did such a beautiful job on that. I love your text in that, Adam, and it is nice to see the way that Christian approached it. There's a lot of things that make a lot of sense in the way that he did it, and I'll never know what it would have looked like if you did it, but it's cool to see you both together doing it.
Nice. Well, it's interesting to me that, you know, I, as we were talking about before, I do kind of change my style, or at least my medium on every book. And when I was still thinking that maybe I would illustrate School's First Day of School myself, I was thinking of it in a fashion that was very close to the way that Christian tends to render things anyway.
Okay.
I think I was, you know, slowly aiming towards really just ripping off Christian Robinson's style. And it, you know, it seemed like a much better idea to actually just see if he was interested in doing it himself rather than you know, take bread out of his mouth. So
I love it. Well, it was good. You did a great job on it. And Mac, I saw that you've got maybe your next one to come out after How This Book Was Made is with Elise Parsley, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's right. It's true. Yeah, it's called The Magic Word.
The Magic Word. Awesome. This is great. And so neat, too, for me. I don't know that I'd like to think that teachers and librarians don't see this connection, but for me it's been neat to see that there's this through line with all of you, that Steve Malk is there with all of you. And so not that he's necessarily making those connections, but to me it's neat to see that those of you that are represented by him are making these great books together. This is me coming off of talking to Kelly and Greg, who did Dragon Was Terrible together, and I know that Steve represents both of them too.
Steve really put us together, Mac and me. He just recognized very quickly, you know, before either one of us probably had even really heard of the other, that we had similar sensibilities and that we were going to like each other's writing and that Mac was going to like my illustration. So, you know, he really made that happen.
That was like 2007, the first time we met him.
That sounds right.
What I like about that is that's sort of the side that none of us parents of readers maybe understand as much, I think, is that idea of, well, you wrote this story, so why wouldn't you be doing the illustrations? Or why wouldn't you get to choose? Why does it have to be somebody else? But here, seeing Steve do it, or knowing different art directors that have done it, or editors that have done it, it's cool to see that the way that people know what they're doing in children's publishing, and the good stuff comes out because of it.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think a lot of people outside of our industry probably assume that we have very antagonistic relationships with our editors, for example. And I think editors make my books better. And it doesn't mean that I always agree with everything they say. And it doesn't mean that I don't, you know, my long-suffering wife doesn't have to listen to me complain about, you know, how so-and-so is so wrong once again about this one. And then, you know, she also knows that in about 2 weeks I'm going to realize that my editor was right, and I'm going to either do everything that she said nearly, or I'm going to wish that I had after the book has come out.
Well, I love it. I'm glad that we not only get to meet your editor through How This Book Was Made, but I'm glad that How This Book Was Made is exactly what it is, that both of you arrived at this place together. It's a really, really good book. I feel like all I'm using is the word really today, but it's something really special. So thank you for sharing it with me, and in that way, sharing it with all of us, both of you, Mac, Adam, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Really.
All right. I'm gonna give each of you the last word on our chat. As we say goodbye today, Mac, I'm going to ask you the question and then we'll turn Adam to you. So I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Mac, what message would you like me to bring to them from you, to your readers?
I think Adam and I, you know, we collaborate and we've got a joint message. Kids, we have hidden a treasure in Mr. Winner's library.
Kids, it could be literally anywhere. Tear all the books off the shelves, look behind them, upend the shelving rack. Go behind that desk you're not supposed to go behind.
Rip up the carpets.
You know, it could even be on Mr. Winner himself. Check his pockets. Don't be worried if he says no, don't reach into my pockets. That's just part of the game.
Go now. The first one to find it keeps it.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow.
All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if the episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Elise Parsley shares the magic word, her new picture book with Mac Barnett. What actually... She keeps the magic word a secret. You'll have to listen and find out. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.